This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Hey, good Wednesday to you. Thanks for joining us. Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. All right, coming up in this hour, the Tom Brady Award for SI Sportsman of the Year seemed fitting, but there were other candidates that were also fitting. We're going to talk about that, whether or not Brady was indeed the 2021 Sportsman of the Year. Sports Illustrated, that award was a really big deal for a long time. I think it's gotten less and less. They've tricked it up a little bit, not necessarily giving it to one person, giving it to a group of people. Sometimes they've given it up to like a concept. But nevertheless, Brady wins the award. And you would say, sure, that seems like a good award to give to him. He won a Super Bowl and all coming in his first year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But we'll give you some of the other nominees and whether or not it was fitting. But we're also going to talk about the college football playoff and how we got here, which is since 2014, the four teams that you get to see play it out for the national championship has been decided by a group of a committee. And the people change, but the concept is still the same. A representative from the Power Five conferences, an independent, some other people have joined in the fray that are part of the college football landscape. But nevertheless, the group of voters that are in that room in Texas and decide on the fate of the college football national championship replaced a terrible system, an awful system of computers and computer programs. But we're going to talk about this article that I read at The Ringer by Roger Sherman that says the computers were right all along. And it brings up some arguments that whether or not we think that this system is actually the best. And maybe, just maybe, that the BCS computers that we hated so badly weren't actually all that bad. And there's some stories to sort of make his point. And I'm going to bring that up because we are heading into a point now where college football has to expand. I know we've been hearing the talk about it's on the table, it's off the table, it's back on the table, it's back off the table. But you know eventually this thing is going to have to expand. And as college football fans, do we want the same system in place to determine how that is going to be determined? This same group of people that really don't answer to anybody making decisions on the fate when there was a pretty good system in place that got mucked up by the humans. Talk about that coming up next as we continue.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. All right, so I was perusing some interesting... So, like, during the afternoon, sometimes I'll do deep dives. I'll find, like, a long-form piece at The Athletic or The Ringer or some of these websites where somebody's done some really good journalism, some, you know, real in-depth stuff and creates one of those long reads. If you are familiar, for example, with Sports Illustrated, you may have known this. It would be the equivalent of the back of the magazine article. There was always, like, the big article that they would have. And so every now and then I kind of dive into these, and usually they're pretty good and they're entertaining, and sometimes doesn't really lead to me changing my mind. But I read one yesterday by Roger Sherman at The Athletic, which I found fascinating just in its title alone. And the title was that the college football computers were right all along. And it was kind of fascinating to me because I was one, like a lot of people, that hated the computers. But I think I hated the computers because it was a popular thing to dislike. You know, every now and then you don't know why you don't like something, and then you realize, oh, I don't like it because it seems like everybody dislikes it. There wasn't any reason for me personally to dislike the computer system in college football. I didn't have a dog in the fight at all. South Carolina never competed for a national championship in the entire run of the college football, you know, BCS system. And to be honest with you, outside of a few controversies, I never thought that the championship game, whoever the two teams were, was so fundamentally flawed that the system needed to be blown up. I mean, you could go back to maybe Auburn's year where they weren't ranked in the preseason poll, and then they were undefeated, and they sat and watched the Orange Bowl between, I think it was USC and Oklahoma, I think it was, that played for the national championship. Nevertheless, there are only a handful of problems that I kind of had during its run. But overall, because I didn't have a passionate dog in the fight, South Carolina was never left out of the final two. And oh my God, it's an outrage. I never thought about it. I just joined the chorus of America that said the computers have to go. But we blamed that system because we don't like mathematics in our sports. We don't mind analytics, right? We don't mind baseball analytics, for example. It's just too prevalent now. Yeah, there's a sort of an old school feel, but it feels like it's really kind of an ancient art of reading by eye and all of those things, whereas computers and analytics have just sort of taken over. And they've taken over in a lot of golf. In golf, for example, tennis, for example, they're using analytics to help the players in their game. All sports have dived into the analytics. And so in college football, that's exactly what they tried to do, right? They called up computer programmers back in the day. There was one Kenneth Massey, who was the one guy that created the system that SEC Commissioner Roy Kramer kind of reached out to him and said, we'd love to use that system. And that was it. But what happened in the BCS era was they tinkered with it so much. There was one point where two-thirds of the formula that was going into the system was based on human polls, everything from the coaches poll to the AP poll to the Harris poll. And so they were allowing a lot of human human influence into the system. So think about the system that we have now, right? So they come at you in 2014 with this playoff. Well, actually, it occurred a few years earlier when they said that there would be a playoff. But then they said, we're dumping the computers, listening to the cry of America, who kept saying over and over again that this is ridiculous, right? Coaches said that they don't play in front of computers. Barack Obama, who was the president at the time, he couldn't wait to get rid of the computers as a college football fan. I mean, celebrities, everybody that had anything to say about college football seemed to blame their woes on a computer system that they didn't understand, a formula that they didn't understand. And it seemed like fair game. But is what we have better? I mean, think about this for a second. You've got people in a room that aren't accountable to anybody, right? They work for within their own conferences, and some of them are directly tied to schools that are being discussed. And when their schools are discussed, they have to leave the room. So let's say you're, a representative, you work at the University of Iowa, and Iowa's playing in the Big Ten championship game. And Iowa is being talked about, not just in the Final Four, but, down the list in the top 25. Who gets a New Year's Bowl bid, right? Where are your rankings so that these things are decided? It doesn't necessarily have to be the championship or the playoff, but you could be going to a better bowl as you got higher ranked. But that individual has to leave the room. He has to recuse himself when Iowa is being talked about. But he doesn't have to be, or he or she doesn't have to be taken out of the room when other teams in the Big Ten are discussed. So think about that for a second, right? Imagine if you were in a room discussing best actor nominees, right? And you represented one of the actors. So when they were discussing your client's chance to win the Oscar, you had to leave the room. But when you had to talk about the other actors, you got to stay and throw your input. Wouldn't you start sort of putting down or finding flaws in the other actors within the room? Like, wouldn't you just naturally do that? Well, you would be like, yeah, I know Leonardo DiCaprio is a great actor, but this is really not one of his best films, right? Right? And, it's the same thing here. Do they do it intentionally? No, but, subconsciously, some of those people could be putting themselves in position to make their school look a little bit better. Maybe promoting a team that their school beat and downgrading a team that their team lost to so that their school may appear a little better to this to the other members of the committee without them actually trying to do it on purpose, because there is some sort of bias that creeps into this conversation. Now, the computers, for their part, tried not to be biased because they're computers. They just go by the formula that you punch in, right? So you punch in the data as the data is given to you by the sport as it unfolds. But what happened was over the years from 1998 till 2013, that system never remained consistent. There was simplistic formulas that became very, very complex. Margin of victory used to be a big factor. They took it out. They took down, like, if there was two polls that were widely off, they took them out of the equation. All right, so they tinkered with the formula for a long, long time. But the reality of it is what we have now is simply people in a room discussing this and sorting it out the best way they see it. And they don't really have to answer. They don't really have a system. So I'm not saying that the computers were better. I think that the article that I was reading by Roger Sherman, he sort of lends itself to the idea that the computer system was actually better than we remember it. And I'll concede those points. But I do think that college football, one of its biggest issues is going to be, as this thing expands, exactly who is going to be in that room and how is this going to take place? Because the larger the pool, meaning the larger the teams, the larger the prize, right? You're not just talking about four teams where you're on the outside and you're like, you know, we're a good football team, but I don't see us ever being in a top four. But if you expanded it to eight, you've got a lot more people really vested in the interest. I said this at the top of this segment. As a South Carolina Gamecock, I had no real skin in the game when it came to the way the computers was spitting out its formula. All right, Alabama's in. All right, maybe Oklahoma State got screwed. All right, we're seeing a rematch of this. Or, all right, you know, so-and-so. In the end, I would just roll my eyes and go, well, I mean, not the way I would have done it, but in the end, I don't care. What do I care? But now, if you expand this thing to eight, you're going to include 15 teams that should have a really good shot at getting into the eight, maybe even more than that. And towards the end of the season, there's going to be a lot more teams that are going to want to look at that committee, and they're going to want to say, how exactly do you come to these conclusions? What is the thing you're looking for? What is the thing you punish us for? And in the end, the computers never asked, you never had to ask the computers that. You had to ask the people that were creating the formula, but once the formula was in, you never had to wonder about the computer being biased against your team. The computer didn't hate Boise State, for example, and kept the Broncos out of the top two. You know, they never hated teams. They never had a bias towards teams. They were never sick of seeing teams. They never worried about the little tiny nuances of a coach leaving or a player transferring that didn't have to be thrown into the equation. We would have been outraged if Notre Dame had a shot at getting into this playoff. They were kept out because Brian Kelly left. Right. And there's a lot of people who feel that Marcus Freeman was hired right away because they wanted to send a message to the committee that everything was right with Notre Dame, just in case some sort of chaos situation had happened last Saturday. The computers never asked you to do that. The computers never said, oh, your star running back got hurt. Sorry, guys. I know you're 11-1, but yeah, we're not going to send you to the playoff without your running back. Oh, nor are we going to send it without your head coach. The formula never accounted for things like that. And again, I'm not hearkening back to a good old days of the computers. There was hatred for it, and there was a real reason for it. It didn't seem like we should be deciding who plays for the national championship based on a formula, based on a computer program, based on mathematicians who sat around rooms and did numbers. We want some people with a feel for the game. We want some eyeballs on the game. We just need to know who the eyeballs are and what they're actually thinking. It may not seem like a big deal now. Right now, today, the four teams that are in the final playoff, they're locked in. I think all of us, if we were in the room, would have come up with these four. I don't think anybody would have vouched for even Notre Dame, who is the first school out, ranked fifth. No, the four teams that are in, everybody would have had these four teams. You might have argued a little bit on the seeding, but not much. But that's not always going to be the case. It's not always going to be the case. Did you enjoy the Big 12 championship game over the weekend? It was kind of a classic, right? Wasn't it? Two huge goal line stands by Baylor. You know, that Oklahoma State runner running to the pylon can't quite get it because of great defensive play by Baylor. In you know, one guy who really created that angle to make sure that that runner didn't get in. Do you love that? Did you love that game? Do you like that setting in 18? You know why it's there? It was there because the Big 12 didn't have one. And then the committee told them, basically, you need one. Because there was a time where Baylor and TCU were tied and they didn't play a college they didn't play a conference championship game in the Big 12. And all of the rankings that kept coming out said, TCU and Baylor, you are one of the top teams in college football. Congratulations. Congratulations. You're going to be in. And the Big 12 said, we don't even know who our champion is. They're co-champions. Since you said all along that you are the committee that's going to decide, you can pick the one team you like better, but we'll have co-champions. And then Ohio State won their conference championship game, and TCU and Baylor were out, and this was year one. And the Big 12 had to go get a conference championship game. Why? Because the committee basically said you had to have one. And they did. And they did. Now, would the computer system have put in Ohio State? Probably. It liked those kind of things. It liked added football. In the history of it, Notre Dame used to kind of get screwed over sometimes. Sometimes, you know, when they didn't play an extra game. And you kind of had to wait on them. But it's going to get worse with the controversies if there's no real idea onto what they're thinking and to what they're feeling. I don't compare this to college basketball at all. There's just too many teams. And as I've told you many, many, many times, I don't shed tears for anybody that can't get into a 68-team playoff. I just can't. I just can't. Maybe I'm cold. Maybe my heart is too small. But I don't care if an 18 and 11 team can't get into this thing. But in college football, that 11-1 school that can't get into an 18 playoff, that 10-2 school that has two top 25 wins, maybe two top 10 wins on their resume that's on the outside looking in, we kind of want to know the system. We kind of want to know the formula, and we don't. But we used to. And I don't think it's that far off to say that maybe the computers weren't as bad as we thought, even though we all hated them. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk some NFL, as Jerry Jones has said all the right things about Dak Prescott, but are they accurate? We'll go over that next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, need gift ideas? A holiday gift guide is something for everyone on your list of prices under $15, like a pair of Mechanics Wear black-coated winter gloves, a Power Torque two-piece magnetic tool holder bar, a Slime digital tire gauge, and much more. Check out the holiday gift guide for great ideas at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Do you know what my biggest problem at Christmas time is?
What's that?
I run into this every year. And every year I think I'm going to change it, but I end up falling into the same trap. I ask my wife what she wants for Christmas, and then she tells me a few things. She's like, well, you know, I'm kind of like this, and I kind of like that. You know, we're kind of at an age where we don't really need anything, so we're just right. Like, you get like that. You think you always want something, but then you get older, and you're like, eh. But she'll go, I don't know, I always thought about this, and I thought about this. And then I go, okay. Do I get her those things?
Right.
Or do I get her a surprise thing that she doesn't have any idea is coming?
And then you get nervous because whether or not you nailed that surprise.
Yeah, because there is a point where she might say, like, you know what I really want? I want new, I don't know, pots and pans or something. Like, you know, whatever.
Right.
And it's just more practical, right? Like, one year she asked for a vacuum cleaner. I swear to God. And I was like, I'm not... You and I will go buy a vacuum cleaner if we need a new vacuum cleaner. That's not a gift. Like, I'm not getting you a vacuum cleaner for Christmas. That's insane.
No.
Like, if we need one, you and I will go to the store and buy one. Like, that's not a gift. It's like, and how misogynistic is that to be like, first of all, it is sad that I don't know the vacuum cleaner is broken, right? Or it doesn't pick up like it used to. But that's not a gift. So I don't know what to do because sometimes she's like, well, I told you two things that I kind of wanted, but then you got me this, you know, this gift basket, which is nice, but it's not what I was hoping for. You know, I don't know. It's just a dilemma I run into. I wonder if all men run into this.
No, yeah, you know what? Yes.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, I know for a fact.
Okay.
Like my wife, my wife is, she has sent me a couple ideas, and we did these Christmas lists for our Elf on the Shelf that, you know, the paper shrunk down. And so I have it. It's, you know, got, it's her little wish list that she has. And so I sit there and I go, well, should I get everything that's on this list?
Yeah.
I mean, is or was she just filling stuff out because, you know, the kids were filling stuff out and we were doing it with them? And, you know, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, we all listed like five things and I was struggling to find five things that I wanted.
Oh, I know. I'm just at an age where if like, if I really want it, I'll just go get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't need, but you know what last year, my wife said to me, she goes, you want to know what you can get me? And I said, what? She goes, she wanted one of those DNA kits because she's adopted. So she really, really wanted to know something, you know, her heritage. And I said, yeah, that's perfect. And then I went through, when I went through that thought process of, oh, do I get her what she asked for? Or do I surprise her? I went, she would probably be sad if I didn't get her this thing, like one thing she wanted. So I got it for it. It's like, surprise, it's the thing you told me. Ha! But I always, you know, one year though, I did surprise her. And I got her a chocolate fountain. And it didn't go over well because she's not a big chocolate person. And I kind of got it for me and the kids. And she kind of knew I got it for her, for me and the kids. And by the way, I'm not, chocolate fountains are fun. They are a pain to clean up. So just warning you, if you ever get one, oh my God, they are such a pain to clean up. You got to take the whole thing apart and you got to wash it in the sink and the chocolate hardens up on it. Not the greatest gift idea for somebody who's not a big chocolate fan. So that's all my dilemma. All right, speaking of Christmas presents, Jerry Jones appeared to have given one to Dak Prescott because he was on his local hit on The Fan in Dallas, and he was talking about, you know, hey, the Cowboys offense seems to be struggling a little bit and whether or not Dak Prescott is struggling with an injury. But Jerry Jones said, no, that's not the case. In fact, here's his quote. He said, the thing that you're seeing is sometimes the pass looks errant because of the receiver. For instance, ran the route 2 yards, cut it off 2 yards shorter. He could be out two more yards before he makes his cut. It can all make the difference in the world as far as his ability to separate. It all has its relatedness to the receivers. And if you're not real crisp on the way the play is designed relative to how many yards you go, the cut, then your passing game can really look off. That's one of the answers, better routes. All right, this seems like a cool thing for the owner to do, right? Wouldn't you love that if you were kind of struggling and the owner was like, nah, don't worry about it. It's other people that's got the problem. It's not you. So I started thinking about this. I like Jerry Jones a lot. Now, sometimes I think Jerry gets a little sloppy in these interviews because he likes the media, and you stick a microphone in somebody's face too many times, some of the times they're going to say the wrong things. And Jerry likes a microphone. But I'm wondering, too, is this a way for Jerry to sort of take the blame off a player he's paying $40 million a year for? A player he publicly backed in a really, really strong way. Is this Jerry's way of making sure that you know he knows that his quarterback is good? And if any failure should come on this offense, you better be looking elsewhere and not the guy I'm paying $40 million a year for. Because remember, Dak Prescott making that kind of money, it did come with its detractors. It did come with people that were wondering openly if Jerry was like crazy. I mean, $40 million is the going rate. It's always going to go up. And you lock in the guy that's your starter. But I remember people going, I don't know if Dak Prescott deserves this kind of money. He's coming off that injury. I don't know what Jerry's going to do with this. Now, there were people like me who said, hey, look, he's your starter. This is the going rate for starters. I mean, you're not going to undercut it. You might as well go out and get it. You can't franchise tag him anymore. Eventually, he's going to go somewhere else. If you don't, you'll get his money somewhere. But I wonder if this is Jerry's way of saying, or does he truly believe this? Or is he sort of using this quote to sort of, well, let's twist it up a touch or two?
See, because I think Jerry is like a true, true football owner.
Yeah, without question.
I think he likes the game more than he likes owning the team.
I do too. You're right.
And I think he is all in on Dak.
Yeah, I do too. I think he is on all, and he's been like that. He's been public about it. Yeah, they may have played a little negotiating hardball, but there was never a doubt that he was his quarterback and he was going to be in Dallas and that was going to be his guy. He may now buckle down on that contract, but he knew that Dak Prescott's my quarterback. And this might be a way to sort of deflect a lot of the blame that's coming Dak's way. If the owner's coming out and saying, hey, guys, look, it's not the quarterback.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. You made a good point about Jerry Jones, and this is why I've liked Jerry Jones for a long time. I think there are owners in sports that are very passive, right? They own these teams as part of something else that they do. They let certain people run the team. They don't really want to get their hands in it because they may not know anything about it. They just own it, and they may like it.
Well, we've said all along, I mean, when you become an owner of any professional team, you're part of an elite club,
right?
That is nearly impossible to get into.
Right. Like, did the late Paul Allen know anything about football?
Right.
Right. I mean, like, was he smart enough about football to make? Probably not.
No, but he had extra cash, and he's like, I want to be a part of this club, and there's a team available.
And Robert Kraft, I mean, he's very public, but I don't think he's involved in the personnel discussions, other than maybe how much it costs and, you know, whatnot. But I don't think he's like, no. I grade him as an 85 on my linebacker scale.
He's
but
too
Jerry
busy getting
does.
Massages.
Right. Yeah. Right. I know. But Jerry Jones is, right? Jerry Jones is.
That's why I go across all the entire landscape of all professional sports. He's one of the few owners. There's a handful out of all professional sports who is that deep into the day-to-day operation.
Right, exactly. Just to sort of personalize the story a little bit, my brother and I grew up in the 70s, and I became a Steelers fan. He became a Cowboys fan. And we still have the rivalry to this day. It's fun. And we talk about our teams and whatnot. But one of the videos I like to show my brother is this ESPN one time did a video. It was a bunch of Steelers fans twirling their towels all around the world. Right. There was even a guy, an astronaut in space with a towel. There was a woman in Egypt in front of a camel twirling a towel. And it was just to promote the NFL and fans and enthusiasm for the fans. And I showed him like how cool this video was. But my brother's point has always been that Jerry Jones has done things to make Cowboy fans really proud of the Cowboys, right? And not in the sense of player personnel, but like when he built his stadium, for example, Jerry wanted to make it the greatest stadium in the history of the world, right? Because his Cowboys were going to be there. And so you're a Cowboys fan. You're like, my owner is all in. My owner wants me to love the Cowboys as much as possible. He wants me to be a proud Cowboys fan. So he's given our team the greatest stadium. And at the time it was the greatest stadium that had ever been built. You know, right, and other stadiums are copying what Jerry has done with AT&T Stadium. But he is public. He lives and dies with the team. He's as angry when they lose. He's as thrilled when they win. Some owners, you never see their reaction because you never see them at all, right? They're never public. But Jerry wears it on his sleeve, and there's something attractive about that. Listen, we all have fun with Jerry with some of the things like the stories we hear. But every time I've talked to Bobby Belt over the years, we talk about Jerry, and he's not as lunatical as if that's a word, as people make him out to be, right? Steven does a lot of the work. Steven does a lot of the analysis. Jerry is just really public. And again, he's very proud to be the Cowboys owner. He wants to put the Cowboys in a position of global success. He has fought the NFL on merchandising. He has fought the NFL on sponsorships because he wants to do things his way, because he knows the value of his franchise compared to other franchises. Like, he doesn't share a merchandising deal. Well, at least he didn't. I don't know if he had to change that over the recent years, but there was a long period of time he didn't share his merchandise. When you buy a jersey of your favorite player, that money is distributed amongst all 31 teams of the NFL. The Cowboys don't get a cut, but the Cowboys keep their own merchandising rights. That was a deal Jerry had. So the merchandise of the NFL, all that official NFL tag stuff, right, some of that goes to the, like, if you buy a jersey, some of that goes to the player, some of that goes to the team, but a lot of that goes into the general NFL merchandising fund that gets distributed with the owners. But Jerry didn't want to do that. Jerry realized he could make more money selling his own stuff than everybody else selling their stuff. Right? Remember when the NFL signed a deal with Coke and he was a Pepsi, I'm staying with the people here. Like, I'm staying with this. Nike, whatever it is. Jerry does things in a way that, sure, benefits Jerry, but he also, as a Cowboy fan, you go, hell yeah, that's no way. We're not like anybody else. We're not. Quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys is different than me and the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We know that. And if you're a Dallas fan, there's something about Jerry's, the way Jerry says, you love the star, I love the star, and we're going to do everything out there to promote the star. Right. And there's something cool about that. Now, some of you may like owners that are never heard from. That's fine. I mean, Shad Khan doesn't speak much in Jacksonville. The Rooneys hardly ever talk to the media. You think about some other ones. Arthur Blank speaks occasionally, but not a lot. Right. I don't even know who the owner is of the couple of teams. Right. How often does Cal McNair speak in Houston? Ever.
Ever.
Not now. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's owners that just never appear in public.
No, that's why, I mean, you know, we can sit there and go, okay, who owns the, pick random team, Minnesota Vikings.
Right.
Right? We really don't know. But you can say who owns the Cowboys, and you know immediately.
Know immediately.
Who it is.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
There's a lot of ego involved. Don't get me wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's a healthy mindset all the time. He likes the attention. Of course he does. But I'm going to be honest with all of you. Let's be honest. No matter what your personality is, if you had enough money to buy the Dallas Cowboys, wouldn't you want to have people know you bought the Dallas Cowboys?
Yep.
Like even if you were quiet and you're the quiet guy in the office, nobody really knows much about your family, and you don't share a lot on Facebook. Maybe you don't even have Facebook. But I got to think, if you struck it rich and somehow wriggled that away from the Jones family in some sort of blackmail deal, because that's the only way you're ever getting it from the Jones family, you tell people you own the Dallas Cowboys too. You'd want to be the face of that franchise. You'd want to let people, maybe not as much as Jerry, but I'd absolutely be on the forefront telling people I own that franchise. Are you kidding? There's only a handful of franchises in the world that are on the level of the Dallas Cowboys in terms of popularity and wealth and whatnot. And most of them are soccer teams.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Right?
You know, let's just stick to the U.S., and there's probably four professional teams in all of the United States.
Right.
And only one of them might be football.
Exactly. I mean, you've got to be you're not owning just a – I have no idea who owns the Nashville Predators, and I've lived in this town for a decade. I have no clue who owns that. You know why? Because they have no interest in knowing who owns the Nashville Predators.
Or, you know, outside – I mean, all the baseball teams.
Right.
I mean, outside of Steve Cohen, because we talk about him a lot, or Steinbrenner's, because we know that name. I couldn't tell you many of the other owners. I can't tell you who owns the Dodgers, and I'm a fan.
I found out a couple of years ago Ted Turner didn't own the Braves. I just assumed he just kept it.
Yeah.
I totally had forgotten he got rid of it. Like that's – but I'll tell you right now, if something ever happened to the Jones family where they lost that team for whatever reason, it would be news for days.
It'd be news for days.
Days.
Plus, we would know the next owner almost immediately.
Immediately.
And he might be a quiet owner. Maybe he's – you know, just a guy who sits behind the scenes, like all the other owners in the NFL, a lot of the owners in the NFL. But we would. Well, I don't even know if we would eventually know, because Jerry Jones is that unique individual that, you know, yes, we know he owns the Cowboys, and he makes sure that we know. You know, that's what separates him. I don't if for whatever reason, like you said, the Jones family decided to sell the Cowboys or had to get rid of the Cowboys or. You know, whatever it might be, we may not even know the next owner of the Cowboys.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's what sets Jerry Jones apart. I mean, God, the guy has a radio show.
Yeah, I know. He gives the fan in Denver his time on a radio hit every week. It's great. You know, I will say, in the years that I was in Denver, one thing my biggest takeaway of that, and I always admit it to people, I was not born a Broncos fan. I did not grow up in the area. I was an outsider coming in doing sports radio in a city that wasn't my place of birth. A lot of people in Denver were not from Denver, but I remember saying one of my biggest takeaways was there was a love affair between the fan base and Pat Bowlen, and when Pat Bowlen owned the team. And Pat was not flashy. He didn't go on radio and whatnot. There is a connection to owners. Like, there is a connection that you feel when – And I think if you're, for the most part, Cowboy fans may disagree some of the things Jerry has done over the years, in terms, just in terms of personnel or signing a guy or given even some of the guys he's given chances to, right? People who've got, you know, some legal problems just to sort of lighten that term. But at the end of the day, he owns your team, and nothing he will do whatever he has to do to win a championship. And that's all as a fan you want your owner to do. You want your owner to give everything he has to. You can disagree. Like, if you're a Yankee fan, you could have disagreed for years and years with maybe some of the money George Steinbrenner spent on certain players. Oh, that guy's a little too old. Why is he giving that guy that much money? I don't know if he'll help our middle of the order. I don't think I like his defense. You can have those sort of barstool debates. That's fine. But at the end of the day, as a Yankee fan, you had an owner that was always trying to win a World Series. Always. He wasn't doing it to make a profit. He didn't cut payroll so his family could make more money out of the deal. The only thing he cared about in owning the New York Yankees was winning a championship. That was it. And that's Jerry Jones. Everything he does is to win a title. Everything. He's not looking for... Sure, the increase of the value is great, but he would gladly give up the exponential increase that he has had for more championships. To own a team like the Cowboys and to have 3 out of 4 titles and to feel like you are, maybe this is the beginning of something great, and to never see that again for a go to 20 plus years and to not see that again, if I was so rich that money didn't matter and I just watched the value of my franchise go up and up and up, but my trophy case getting emptier and emptier and emptier, that would bother me a lot. I wouldn't care in the end if my team was worth $4 billion or $5 billion. I'd be going, man, we're going on 25 years without a championship. That's got to end. Because winning is, you saw that with Mark Cuban when the Dallas Mavericks won the title. It's one of his greatest possessions of all the things he owns, of all the things he's bought. He bought a town in Texas, for crying out loud.
Yep.
He bought a plane off the internet of everything that he has done. Shark Tank, the businesses that he started from scratch, everything. The thing he cherishes so much is that Larry O'Brien trophy, right? Because when you're an owner, that's what you want. And when you're a fan, you just want your owner to want that as much as you do, if not more. And Jerry will, you know that with the Cowboys. You know that. He's not like the Marlins owner that wins and then dismantles. He wants to build something that will dominate forever, and it's got to drive him crazy that he hasn't. All right, hey, coming up next hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb, and then Dave Preston is going to join us. Speaking of the Cowboys, Washington has won 4 in a row. They're 6-6. I don't know if we believe in them, but they're 2 games back at Dallas, and they play the Cowboys twice in 3 weeks. So we'll talk to him about what's going on in Washington, how good this team really is, or is this just a little fool's gold, as I like to say, in terms of where they're at. 4 wins is 4 wins, but are we really buying it? Well, we'll talk to him about that coming up in hour number 2. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour, Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. By the way, Michael on Twitter, my wife goes to outlet malls, buys whatever she wants, and hands me the receipt at home. I go to my phone, to my bank app, and Zeller the money. All done.
See?
Brilliant! Why don't I do that? My wife would go for that. She likes shopping.
Yeah.
I think I'd just go, hey, do me a favor.
But, you know, maybe it's, you know, because we know that his wife is Brazilian. Maybe it's a little different.
Maybe.
You know, because, you know, according to our Christmas movies that we have to watch all the time, it's got to be a surprise or extravagant,
exactly,
or something like that.
It's got to be something she doesn't expect.
Yes.
You did not get me the gold earrings I told you 600 times to buy. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
One year, my wife gave me her Amazon wish list, her checkout. She goes, you can just put your credit card in here. Go, really? She goes, yeah, because this is what I want. Oh, that's the best. But I used to take the kids shopping when they were little. Like, we'd go to the mall. Like, we'd make a Saturday out of it, right? I'd be like, all right, we're gonna fight the traffic.
Well, because that's kids, what we did as kids.
There. Yeah.
You know, I remember distinctly my grandparents taking me and, you're taking me shopping and, you know, saying, oh, what do you think your mom wants? And da da da, and then doing this and doing that. Then all of a sudden they're steering me in a different direction. And I'm like, I don't have that much money, Grandma. And she's like, man, oh, no, you know, we're going to get her all these new pots and pans. And I think coming from her, it was fine.
Right, right.
You know, me, I'm picking out like some sort of, you know, jewelry box.
That's one thing I do miss. Like, my kids and I would we'd get in the car, we'd drive to the mall, we'd fight the traffic, and I'd hate it. You know,
I still try to do that. I take but it's usually what. So Christmas this year is on a Saturday, right?
Yeah,
I'll probably go Thursday.
Yeah, right. Me too.
Take the kids and go, Come on, kids, let's go find something for mom, and we got to do it within an hour because I don't want to be here any more than you do.
Yeah, so I've done. I take them out to dinner, get the gifts, bam, done. Yeah, we do that, but now, no, not anymore. Now that they're older, it's like, they don't want to hang out.
Do it yourself.
Nah. So that's a brilliant idea, Michael. I'm just giving you the proper credit. Well done.
That reminded me of this video I was seeing. It was a husband sitting on the couch. He goes, huh, why is my wife's stocking empty?
Yeah. Saturday Night Live did a bit about that. They did like a Christmas song. And everyone in the family was bright, like in the song talking about what they got in their stocking, and the mother goes, and my sock is completely empty, and I remember and I laughed hysterically because that's exactly what happens. Yeah. I never get the stocking stuffers. My wife does really good with stocking stuffers. I never think about getting the stocking stuffers.
I know, you almost want to say, hey, you know what, just can you fill it up yourself?
Yeah, right? Find some things that, you know, like around to the drugstore. You like.
Don't you like small things? Go ahead, get some earrings and throw it in there. Exactly. Not from the jewelry store, though. Let's be real.
See, and I got to this idea of putting in, like, Starbucks gift cards or something. It'd still make the sock look empty. So it doesn't even, fill up. All right, we got
give them what they want, cash.
Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next hour, and then Dave Preston on Washington.